I'd like to start here by saying that we are finishing up our series in Titus this week. And there's some background things we're going to talk about, because as Paul finishes this letter or epistle, he is going to mention many details that they needed to know. And so let's just set the plate. Paul's first missionary journey started in 45 AD, and this was written 12 years later, in 67 AD. It's the second to last letter that we have that Paul wrote, getting near the end of his ministry. We presume that he died after the second Roman imprisonment, although some people think that he went and did another ministry to Spain and had a third imprisonment. The Bible just doesn't talk about this. It's very interesting because all the things we have of Paul, all of his writings and that, occurred in a 10-year period. And so he got packed a lot into a short time of ministry. You notice that we're going to talk about Artemis and Tychicus. One of them would be replacing Titus after he had finished appointing all of the elders and pastors in each of the cities in Crete. And these people, the person who would replace them would be like the bishop, as it were, or the superintendent of the area, would help encourage those people and make it strong. We don't know much about Artemis, except his name is probably shortened because Artemis was a female name for the goddess of hunting. And so he probably had this Greek name that was shortened down because it was probably a mouthful, like Artemidorus or something like that. Tychicus is mentioned in other New Testament books by Paul and in Acts, and he was sent out and was a trusted companion of Paul, who became a leader in the church. And so these are the things we know. And then we'll see Zenas and Apollos. We also don't know much about Zenas. It's interesting that Zenas is mentioned as a lawyer. And there's two ways we can go on that, because Paul doesn't elaborate. Because if he was a Jewish person with a Greek name, like Apollos, because Apollos has a Greek name too, then he, like Apollos, would be a student of the Old Testament law, the books of Moses, and like Paul, would have had deep training in this. More likely, though, since it doesn't call Zenas and Apollos lawyers, this was a Roman lawyer who would handle things like wills and lawsuits and things like that. And so he was probably a very trained man who then started a new career serving God. And so that's what's going on. Nicopolis. That's interesting. This is a place that comes. There are actually a lot of Nicopolises, because this means victory city. And this one was formed by Caesar Augustus after his victory over Antony and Cleopatra. And so 97 years earlier, they started this city and built this city up, and it's still around. And many of them were named Nicopolis, but this was the best well-known. And the one that was right in between, where we think Paul was at this time, probably in Philippi, and of course where Titus was in Crete. And they would meet there. And that's going to come into effect as we go further along. And we also see here that Titus was given a task, and he's supposed to do it, and he's expected to complete it in a bit of time, and then come back and report to Paul, tell all the stories, and then spend time together. We're going to look at ministry as teamwork today, and there are just two simple points that help bring that out. Number one, one way that it's teamwork is ministry should be about deep relationships. Now, obviously, a deep relationship between us and God, and Paul is assuming that, but he's talking about deep relationships between fellow Christians, between fellow teammates in ministry, people that work together. Much about the way he finishes this letter is talking about how we minister together. And the first subpoint we want to bring out is prioritizing time together. As soon as I sent Artemis or Tychicus to you, do your best to come to me at Nicopolis, because I have decided to winter there. Now, neither of them were there yet, but Paul had made provisions to be there. Now, I don't think that Paul was going to winter there as many people would winter in Nicopolis, a beautiful place to spend some time and rest and relax. He was going to go there and maybe rest a little bit, but he was certainly going to do ministry. It was central on the west coast of Greece. Greece, and he could have gone to many areas from there on side trips and spread the gospel and also visit churches that had been planted around there. But the reason on the winter time is that it was a hard time to travel. Number one, sea travel almost completely shut down because the sea became too dangerous to travel. And you remember that Paul was actually shipwrecked three times, two already by this time. And so he knew the problems with this. And it was more dangerous for travel otherwise, and harder to be on the road. It could get cold at nights and things like that. And so he was going to stay at a home base. But notice that he was prioritizing them getting together. The NIV translated, do your best, but it's literally to be speedy, but it's used figuratively to be diligent or hurry to come and see me. It shows that Paul was longing to see Titus again. He built these close relationships, these teamwork together, these deep relationships that allowed him to be able to speak into other people's lives and them to send people off fully trusted to do ministry. My mother used to tell a story about my older brother, Davey, as he was called back then, and me when I was called Billy. And she was trying to get our attention to help her with a chore. And she would call out for us and nothing. You know, you could just hear crickets. She'd yell out. And it was a big area. It was a country church, and we could go a long ways away. And after a number of times yelling, she finally said, "We'll be there in a little while." And it was from a great distance. Well, that little while was never. And then another half hour goes by, and by this time she was done with a chore she needed our help with, and she yelled out, "Dinner," and she said, literally, in less than a minute, we were in the house, washed up, and sitting at the table. And so this is what it means to prioritize, to make it something of value. And for us, of course, dinner was the priority. Helping mom with chores wasn't. Now, I'm not telling you to follow that. I'm telling you to follow Paul's example. Be speedy. Hurry up. Rush to spend time with me because I want to see you, is what he's saying. And that's how we should be. We should want to be with those people that we build relationships with, that minister alongside us. So teamwork is an attitude, but it also is based on close relationships. And of course, the length of time was winter time. It was going to be a good bit of time that they would spend together. They would debrief, they would talk, and they would minister together. Then they'd go out and do more ministry and come back, but they'd live in the same area for a good long time and build their relationships. The second subpoint on deep relationships and how it builds teamwork is supporting the ministry of others. We should not only be about our passions in our ministry. Paul talked about the church as a body, and each one has a different role, and all are valuable. He talked about the fruit of the Spirit and the gifts of the Spirit, and how everyone has different fruit and different gifts. And I should be passionate about what you are gifted in and what you're excited about. Maybe not as passionate as what I am excited about, but I should really care about what you're doing. And here it's in his instructions to Titus that he was to pass along to the churches of Crete. Do everything you can to help Zenas, the lawyer, and Apollos on their way and see that they have everything they need. Here are these other evangelists, these other teachers who are doing the Christian ministry, who likely were not under Paul's direct leadership, and yet they were there in Crete. And Paul was, or they were probably carrying the letter that we have read for these last weeks and brought it to them. And they were going to go on from there to other places. And Paul was saying, do what you can to be a part of their ministry as well as doing your ministry, as well as doing what I have given you to do. And so notice in the English, do everything at the beginning so that they can have everything they need. It's not exactly how it is in the Greek, but it's a proper emphasis here because it was something where they were told to make it important that they support what other people are doing. And so we can do this in many ways. We can ask people about their ministry, what they're involved in. Ask them about their greatest challenges. Ask them about their greatest joys. Ask them how we could help them. And we can do that for people just we know in the church, and we can do that for our missionaries. Many life groups have sponsored missionaries, and you can write and connect and see how you can support them, even though they're great distance from you. And you can come in and help them. You can also teamwork in ministry. Some of you say, I'm not that great at sharing the gospel, either my story or the gospel story. Well, I bet you have friends that are great at that, and you might be a connector. You might connect to people. And so team up. Maybe in this golf outing, you know, Pastor Dave is trying to get at least 100 people, and Tim are trying to get at least 100 people. And this is for connection, but it's also for connecting with people outside the church. And so if I actually played golf, which I never have, and if I actually had two shoulders that didn't have bad rotator cuffs, I would be there, because this is an easy ask. You ask somebody, and then maybe they connect with other of your Christian friends, and then maybe they have more Christian friends. And it doesn't care which of us shares the gospel with them. They make these connections, and together we cross-pollinate our ministry. And so they're trying to cross-pollinate. Help these people in many ways. Come alongside them. And so we see the relationship building, being in each other's lives. Our second point is about generosity. It's very interesting, and I will tell you that it's a little difficult in most English translations to understand that verse 14 is intricately connected to verse 13. We tend to read verse 14 as only very personal, but it's still in the plural, and it's still talking about all the things that he's telling them to do, for Titus to tell the people to do. Notice in verse 13, it says, do everything you can to help. In verse 14, our people must learn. These are two commands, two imperatives in the Greek. And the first one literally says, quickly or zealously or passionately send forth Zenos and Apollos. Now, this doesn't mean get rid of them. It means send them on their calling and do it with great passion. And that's a command to send them out with your full generosity. And that means that you're going to come alongside them, not only in asking them about their ministry, but seeing what they need. Maybe they need encouragement. Maybe they need to be spurred on. Maybe they need money. Maybe they need provisions. Maybe they need a place to sleep. And all of these things are the things that they would put together. Maybe they need to book passages on a ship before the winter comes so that they can get on their way. And so two imperatives. The first one is to, with great passion, make haste to help them in what they're doing. And to help them means to be generous to them. And then our people must learn. Our people must learn to do good works. And here it's in the context. Doing good works was used before, but it was used more broadly. Here they're zooming in on good works as helping with their need. Helping with their need. Why? Because they have a need. Because we focus in on the need, the opportunity. That we can participate in what they are doing. First off, it helps them. These Christian ministers would not be able to do what they were doing without the support of other people. The missionaries that we support from KBC and the ones that you support privately, many of us have that. I have people that I support because I give to KBC. Then I have people in my family and other people we support because I have personal relationships with them. They could not do the job if we did not send the financial support. They could not do the job well if I do not have prayer support for them. And so generous with our time, with our money, making sure they have what they need so they can be freed up, so they can do the ministry. It's also because of discipleship. Our people must learn. Our people must learn. Generosity and giving to the work of God is something they must learn. That's a part of discipleship. These are young believers. Paul had gone throughout Crete and had believers in all of the towns, and now they're just now appointing leaders. And so these young believers must be taught to give of their resources, of their talents, and yes, of their money. And they were able to do something with this opportunity. Now, these people are already giving to their churches, you have to understand. It's commanded, but now they're asked to do more. And so it is discipleship. I once knew a medical doctor. I've known many medical doctors, but he was a recent convert. He came to Christ in during one of my sermons, even though he'd been a churchgoer all his life. And this guy was so on fire for Christ, even though he was retirement age. And he heard that I was getting together supplies for a young Native American couple who are having their first child. Both of them came from dysfunctional, broken homes with addiction. And they wanted to go a different way. And they had a job, but they just didn't have the stuff, and the families weren't coming alongside them. They didn't have a bassinet. They didn't have a crib. They didn't even have diapers and things like that. And their jobs made it very tight. And, of course, she had to give up her job to have a baby. And so all of this was coming. Well, this doctor learned I was doing this. And he found me, and he said, I want to join in what you're doing to this couple. I know them. I see them at the clinic on the reservation, and they're trying to do the right thing. And he gave me 10 times, at least 10 times more than what I was going to spend on them. He said, you're a poor pastor. I'm a rich doctor. He wasn't rich. He gave away almost everything he made, but he gave a whole bunch. And I started to protest, and he said, don't rob me of the joy of participating in what you're doing here. That was very interesting to me. And of course, we got everything they needed set up. And then he saw them regularly because he did all the well baby care for this child. And it was generous to a fault. And so he was just waiting to jump in, and this is the way we should be. Generosity is focused on others is our second subpoint of the generosity portion. Diligently, I'm translating this with my own translation here. Diligently send Zenas and Apollos out so that they lack nothing. I want you to see a very literal translation. Diligently, passionately send them out so they lack nothing. And so if they're going to go out, may they be oversupplied. May they have too many goods, too much money, and too much prayer support. And that is what he's saying. Titus, go out there and have the people enter in and help these people out on their way, because they are doing the same ministry that Paul did to them when he came to Crete and shared the gospel. And so diligent or speedily is used again here. This is the second time we see this word used here. And so hasten, speedily, make it a priority. And so both times it's used metaphorically for how we prioritize things. And building relationships are prioritized, and now giving is a priority for us. And we're all given resources, and some are given more than other in different categories. Some people are strong. Some people are healthy. Some people have a lot of stuff that they can give away. Some people have a lot of money. A lot of people don't have too much. There's very few people out there looking how to give it away because they have it coming in faster than they can send it out. But we are all supposed to share it. Everything we have is given by God. And so he's saying, give from what you have so they lack nothing. And he was asking them to give very generously for God's work. It's very interesting that average giving in America today is nowhere near the 10% that the Bible talks about in a tithe. And the ministry that could be done, the missionaries that could be sent out, if we would give in greater generosity, would be amazing. And then, generosity is a good deed. That's the last of our subpoints. Generosity is a good deed. Our people must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good in order to provide for your urgent needs and not live unproductive lives. Actually, I don't think it's your urgent needs. I think what they're focusing on is the urgent needs of Zenas and Apollos and their ministry. And unproductive lives is literally not live unfruitful lives. Urgent needs. Let's talk about that. It's actually a stronger word than that. Compulsory, imperative needs. This serves two functions. Number one, to say that certain needs are very important. We have to have shelter. We have to have clothes to keep us warm or cool. We have to have food to eat. We have to have a place to sleep. And so all of these things, it's talking about those needs need to be supplied. But it's also talking more than that, that it is emphasizing that missionaries should not get rich off their ministry. Preachers should not get rich off their ministry. That we should supply richly to the things that accomplish ministry. And yes, I understand the scripture says that those who teach well should get a double portion, and you do not muzzle the ox while it's plowing. All of these are important, and we should richly bless these people. But I think there's also a taste here that we need to learn in the American church and the Western church, because some people think that getting a big TV program or an online thing so they can make money, that is success. Success is winning people to Christ and discipling them to Christ. And yes, you need to have provisions to provide a house and make people retire, because even though ministers and missionaries never really retire, there comes a time they stop wanting to pay us. And so we have to provide for our people well. But what it's saying, I think, here is provide for what they really need, the most important things, but we should not be getting rich off of that. And also good deeds here. Paul has mentioned good deeds before in the book of Titus, more well-roundedly and talked about, but here it's very clear that giving of their time, giving of their money, and giving of their resources to support Zenos and Apollos is very important. And so we want to be doing these good deeds. Now, we know, Paul has addressed this earlier, good deeds do not save us, but people who are saved to become more like Jesus, and we are saved into good deeds. And so this is one way we can do good for Christ's sake. And unfruitful, literally, that they might not be unfruitful. What are we going to accomplish with our lives? What is going to remain? What is going to be tasty? Fruit is something that is tasty and delicious and filling, satisfying. And we want to live our lives so it accomplishes something of value, is what he's getting at here. And so we give of our time, we give of our talents and our service, we give of our money so that we produce things that God appreciates, that other people appreciate. So our missionaries smile when they hear of our prayers, when they get that extra gift of money on their anniversary or at Christmas time, so that we provide tasty fruit for other people. Now, I had really good modeling. My parents taught me to save very early. We had allowances that were based on chores and things like that, starting when we were really young and working up. We had to take the first 10% out right away, and we had to save another 10%. And by the way, I told my mom very early I was going to save 90% because I didn't, well, 80% because we already took the tithe off, but I was going to save 90% of that remainder after I'd done a tithe. And then, you know, spend only from that remaining 10%. And by the way, that habit that my parents instilled in me got it so that I had more money in the bank account when I entered college than it took for the four years of college. Very interesting. And what I learned, though, is that when I followed what they said, I was then able to be generous when things came up. And so then on top of my giving the 10% to God, I was able to see a need and then meet it. I saw somebody that couldn't send their kids to camp, and when, you know, I was in college, I gave the money for that. I didn't have a ton of money, but you made it work because that's the way I'd been raised, and it became easy. Now, it was easier when I lived at my parents' house. Once I got married after the first year of college, once I went to seminary and it was a lot more expensive, once I became a church planter, and they paid me as generous as they could, but it wasn't that generous, you know, as far as wasn't that productive. It was hard, but I still remember it was important. And a story that came back to me 20 years after its event, we had a missionary couple stay with us, and they presented their ministry at our church, and they stayed in our house, Sandra, in our house, and they were really struggling, and they shared their struggles, and I prayed with them, and they had some medical bills and stuff like that that were really troubling them. And Sandra and I talked, and we put aside $100, which was really a reach for us then. We had just adopted three kids, and money was really tight. The church was behind in our salaries because of a farm economy crisis. But we put aside that money and gave it to them and thought that was done. 20-some years later, a man that I did not recognize came up to me, and he was that missionary. And he said that that was the thing that God used to keep them in the ministry, and especially that a poor church planter gave them $100 and then gave them 4 hours of time to listen to them and pray with them. And that's what got them to stay with the ministry, and they were still in the ministry 20-some years later. And I could not even remember his face. Then I realized that generosity is bigger than what I do because God can multiply it. And I shudder to think the times I didn't follow God's leading and I wasn't generous with my time or I wasn't generous with my money or I wasn't generous with my gifts and what God could have done with that. Here's my application suggestions for this week. My first one is pretty simple. Connect with someone to do ministry together. Maybe you want someone in a ministry and you're going to invite somebody in to join you. Maybe you want to be taught by somebody else, somebody who's doing a ministry. Can I come alongside you and learn from you? But doing ministry together or bringing somebody along is a wonderful thing. It builds relationships and we learn from each other. Secondly, write an encouraging letter to one of the missionaries you support. Could be one of KBC's missionaries, or it could be one that you support privately. But just write one to tell them. Maybe you can send a gift too. If God has so blessed you that you could do that, you could send an extra gift besides what you normally do. And just say, I'm with you. I appreciate what you're doing for Christ. These people get very discouraged, and so many of these people leave behind so much for the cause of Christ. It's the least we can do to come alongside them. And thirdly and finally, choose a specific way this week to be generous with either your time, your money, or your talent expertise. Something that you don't normally do. Just prayerfully look for a way that you can be generous and see what God can do from that.